Well, look who's the swinging party now. Hi, I'm Scott Ott with Bill Whittle and Stephen Green, and this episode of Right Angle is brought to you by the members at BillWhittle.com. And gentlemen, I had a chance to catch some of the highlights and some of the reportage of the first night of the two-night mega Democratic primary debate with 10 candidates going at it on the first night and another 10 the next night. The lead actors in the first night's performance were Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. How do I know that? Because the media told me that that's the way it would be before it ever happened. And guess what happened? That's the way it was. They were predicted to be the most important by the mainstream media, and they were the most important according to the mainstream media. In any case,
every call I make turns out to be 100% accurate when right. I determine the outcome.
Exactly. It's like when the pitcher is winding up, you go, this is going to be a strike. Strike! okay, so what I mean by the swinging party is this idea that somehow the Democrats are riven deeply by ideological differences. About eight of the candidates on the stage at this first round of debates were arguing for a kind of a more pragmatic Democratic Party, one that can, number one, get elected, number two, actually govern and get things done, and arguing against the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren wing of the party, which I will now call Elizabernie Sauron.
Just Sauron will be fine.
Sauron, for sure.
Yeah, Sauron.
I know what that means.
That their utopian socialism doesn't have a chance. So even if it sounds great and gets your blood flowing, what difference does it make? Because you really can't govern that way. And frankly, the Democratic base doesn't want it that way. But Stephen Green, conservatives seem to always argue that President Trump is pushing this idea that the Democratic base is going far left because of the squad and all this kind of stuff. Steve, are the so-called moderates on that stage correct? And that not only is America not ready for Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren's socialism, but they couldn't even get the nomination within their own party?
Wow. Well, okay. Number one, I'm not the mainstream media, so I'm not going to make any predictions about who's going to win the nomination and then say, hey, look, I was right, because I don't actually get to pick the winner. So it's just, you know, the old Yogi Berra line, predictions are hard, especially about the future. I'm staying away from.
That's right. Steve doesn't pick the winners. The superdelegates do. Go ahead.
That's right. Well, okay. Well, the superdelegates, their job is, if you're unfamiliar with them, they're delegates who are not chosen by Democratic primary voters. They're party insiders and donors and whatnot. The superdelegate's job is to step in and choose the nominee in case Democratic voters choose the wrong one.
Right. And there are no Republican superdelegates. Is that not true?
That is true. This is the Democrats. This is how they defend democracy. Lenin would have called it the vanguard of the revolution, essentially.
Yep.
What would McCartney have called it? No, go ahead.
No. It'd have a catchy tune, but just meaningless words.
It's got a backbeat. You can't lose it.
Let me tell you what I thought was most interesting about last night. Forget what the mainstream media told you were going to see and then later told you that you had seen. And go to what people were actually searching for during and after the debate. And it turned out the biggest Google searches were for John Delaney, who represents sort of the moderate wing of the party. He came out in defense of little things like private insurance last night. If there's somebody left in the party in the Bill Clinton mold, I think it's Delaney. And at the other end of the spectrum, the most searched for name last night was the seer of dark psychic forces. Those were Marianne Williamson's actual words last night during the debate. First candidate in presidential debate history to use the Seinfeld yada, yada, yada and refer to dark psychic forces. And she is so far out there. She speaks the modern language of meaningless, feel-good mumbo-jumbo so fluidly and so fluently and so effortlessly that on the demagogue scale, I think she scares me a little bit more than Bernie Sanders does. She's a very interesting case. I don't have any idea where she actually stands on anything because she
except for reparations.
Yeah, well, except she was very clear on that. But she speaks this sort of Oprah language better than, you know, that sort of soft, gentle, but meaningless psychobabble that the daytime talk shows revel in. She does that better than almost anybody. And Bill, you were saying before that it was Mayor Pete Buttigieg who scares you the most as a potential nominee. I got to tell you, I don't think she's got a chance in hell of getting the nomination. But, you know, I could very well be wrong about that. But I think Marianne Williamson now might be my Pete Buttigieg.
So, Bill Whittle, Elizabeth Warren said something interesting during this debate, which I know you weren't expecting, but she did say something interesting.
Stopped clock, you know.
That's right. she was talking about how legislation in this country is written by multinational corporations for multinational corporations, and that multinational corporations have no loyalty to America. And Bill, that almost seemed to me to be a conservative message that was saying America first. She sounded patriotic. She sounded like these big, you know, what's that term that they use? It's globalism to let these multinational corporations essentially steer the course of legislation through the American legislative branch. Do you think you can find some common ground with Betsy Warren there? And maybe that side of the party has a chance in the nominating process?
Make sure I understand this correctly. Elizabeth Warren is saying that there is no democracy as we understand it because multinational corporations control the legislation. And as a person who's responsible for the legislation, I would find that to be a remarkably interesting position to argue. If your argument is that the entire Senate and the House of Representatives is corrupt because everybody's bought out by these multinational corporations, and I'm a member of the Senate, it seems a little self-defeating to me. But this is what you get when you have a party with that kind of
I think she would say
ideological base.
She would say enough of them have been bought out. Not her, certainly not Senator Sanders, but enough of them have been purchased.
You run against multinational corporations because it's a gateway drug to running against national corporations. It allows you to get all ginned up about people making money, and they're not American companies, so there are no American jobs on the line. And it's a good way to get people lathered up and kind of test the waters for this whole sort of, you know what, this whole corporation thing is really kind of a bad idea. I've been saying for 6 months now, these people are on the reef and they can't get off it. They just can't. They're going, and Donald Trump has been, I think, very effective at blowing that sail in the direction he wants it to go. It's all about enthusiasm. I mean, when we talk about voter turnout, it's not a question of whether or not people have the means to get to the polls. Maybe you could argue occasionally, you know, a freak blizzard or something, but that's not what wins elections. What wins elections is enthusiasm. It's like it's either enthusiasm for your guy or enthusiasm against the other person. And when the Democratic Party is this fundamentally divided this early, in fact, I'm telling you guys, I've been saying this for a while now. When Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was elected in 2018, that was, in my opinion, the very biggest influence on Donald Trump winning in 2020, because she's not smart enough to know that these are not conversations that you're supposed to have in public. These are conversations you're supposed to have on either the Lolita Express or maybe out on Google Camp, which I'll be talking about on our things. But you don't say things like this in front of the American people. You don't tell the American people we want to get rid of jet travel to save the planet. They all believe it, and that's the plan. But you can't just tell them that, because then the American people beyond to what you actually believe. And that's the end of the Democratic Party as we know it. So they're stuck, Scott. And so this is where logic is our friend, as always. One of these two wings will win. It's either going to be a moderate or, when I say a moderate, I mean garden variety communist as opposed to, you know, Pol Pot kind of a kind of person. But basically, you're either going to have the centrist or the leftist win the election, the nomination rather. And if you get the centrist, then all of the passion of the social justice warriors who think that Bernie Sanders is the guy who's going to basically destroy corporations and give them all of their money are not going to go out and vote for Joe Biden or somebody else who's kind of vanilla. And if, on the other hand, one of these lunatics does get the nomination, there are going to be huge numbers of Democrats that are either going to say, look, I cannot vote for Donald Trump's, but there's no way I'm voting for this socialism, so I'm either going to sit it out or whatever the case may be. And on the other side of the equation, just briefly, I think Trump's position is far stronger with his electorate than it was in 2016. So right now, at this moment, I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
So there's a process that perhaps is just the way it has to work, but I think it's kind of sad that a political party really only examines itself when it's out of office, so to speak, when it's not in the White House.
Good point.
And right now, the Democrats are going through this process. We didn't hear any of this during the reelect President Obama campaign. There's no introspection that happens at that time. The only thought is, let's get our guy back in the White House. But now that they're out of the White House, they've got to figure out who they are again. And they look at what happened in the past and they think, well, we can draw some lessons from that. Others say, ignore the past. Everything changes all the time. Nobody thought Donald Trump would get elected. If you'd looked at the past, you would never have expected that clown to get into the White House, but he did. And so right now, the Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, the Sauron wing of the party, is basically saying we need to be who we are and we need to boldly speak about systemic revolutionary reform of governance. And the moderate side of the party is saying you're going to scare away not only the Republicans and the independents, you're going to scare away more than half of your own base. And so this argument's going on. And frankly, I think it's a salutary process. I like to see the political parties examining who they are and kind of holding that up before the voters and saying, hey, is this what you want? Or is it this over here? Now, sadly, politicians will go whichever way they think that the crowd is going to go. You know, the process of leadership in politics is, you know, watching the parade going down Main Street and running to get out ahead of it so that you can look like its leader. and that's how it's been going. But I will say this, from the perspective of conservatives or Republicans or people who don't agree with these hard left socialist type Democrats. When you're speaking about this, I think it is more healthy to speak of it in terms of this is who they are. It's okay to label them as socialists, as the president and others has done. But it also needs to be clear that I'm not talking to you, bread and butter, rank and file Democrat Party member. I'm not talking about you. Only 20% of the Democratic Party sees itself as hard left. I want to woo you away from those people. I want to show you who they are, not to damn you with them, but to show you that there's an opportunity to come away from them and make your party the party that you thought you joined when you joined years ago. And so if we can somehow strike that balance between calling out the socialism and the utopianism for what it is and the danger that it poses to this country, but at the same time, open that door and invite the people across the bridge to say, you know, you still have time to get away from that. And it's no betrayal to the Democratic Party to live up to the original ideals that you thought that you held. Yeah. Come with us. We really are now the repository for those ideals of equal justice under law that you thought that you were clinging to. Your party has let go of that and has decided for a top-down, controlling, more fascistic, frankly, form of government. For Bill Whittle and Stephen Green, I'm Scott Ott. Thanks to the members at BillWhittle.com for making Right Angle possible.